Obviously, the Portfolio Committee on Correctional Services, us as a committee, will have time on our own to sit and discuss. But I really hope that we must. This must be the final presentation from. We can't drag on and on and on with this thing. So today, if that report and then the Kala Kabusha escape, where 10 inmates escaped last year, and then the reason escape in the Johannesburg prison, where an awaiting trial inmate escaped, Lacoste escaped there. So we are going to deal, we are going to get briefing from the department on this escape. But one of the major functions of prison is to protect the public through safe custody of prisoners until their sentences are served. The community cannot regard the Department of Correctional Services as successful if it cannot prevent escapes like this that we are dealing here today. For the past 3 years, this portfolio committee have seen very questionable escape. I'm saying the past 3 years. The Mata escape, the Kala Kabusha 10, and now this one of Lacoste. I'm saying it's questionable because the manner in which this escape took place leaves a lot of questions. We are asking, is it really escaped, or are these people being helped to go out of prison? And the department, it's only the department who can answer these type of questions. That's why we are calling the department to answer this type of questions. Commissioner and the department, we are not here to fight with the department. We are here to assist the department, really to deal with this rotten apple. Officials that doesn't have any respect for the safety of other people who is doing this. I'm saying that we must get to the bottom of this type of escape. But Commissioner, last week, this portfolio committee also expressed a thing that for the 4 years I've not seen as a chairperson. They have expressed and said that they are getting impatient with all these briefings, all these investigations, endless investigations, explanations that don't go to the heart of the problem. We really want to only to hear the truth. How does this thing happen? You know, we are not dealing here with small fry. It's big people who and very dangerous people who the market issue is a syndicate. Your investigation revealed that it's a syndicate, the market issue. That's one now of Labor, even the Kalakabusha one, that one of Labor, it's also a 36 million rand is involved. It's not a thing of this person is serving 6 months and he escaped. This one is serving 2 years and he escaped. And you, Commissioner, will tell us today how many people have escaped of high profile. And I can say it here now, before you are briefing us, that it's very rare that we find a person escaping from prison nowadays. It's very rare. But this type of escape put a lot of question marks. The department is very successful in securing that people must stay inside prison over the 5 years. But you see, this type of commission, this type of escape put a lot of questions. Is it really escape, or are these people not being helped by officials? Some of the officials who is corrupt, I'm saying some of the officials who is corrupt. We want to hear from you, Commissioner, and the department, to help us understand, is it true or is it not true? Commissioner, we are going to start with the closest year one. From there, we will go to Kalakabusha, and then we will go to the Lakot, because Lakot was the last. Over to you, Commissioner.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson Bloom and members of the Portfolio Committee. It's been some time since we've been before this committee, since the last recess. Very, very good to see the members begin to have a stall, if we're not with you, Chairperson, count the work that we do and not to. And I noticed that the member who I must confess I'm not familiar with, but I thought today you may mean business, so that's why you're not taking us to the trouble of introducing the honorable
member. Let me introduce Commissioner. Let me introduce, because some of your delegation is also new. you are correct. Sorry, I must apologize. I'm going to start with Bishop Tolo. Bishop Tolo is from the Limpopo province. Ntate Pala, also from the Limpopo province. Ntate Mahote, Stem Mahote, from Western State. A very unpredictable place. You know, this weather is not nice here. But he's from here. And then Mr. Sheikh Sele, is from KwaZulu-Natal, where the regional commissioner of KwaZulu-Natal comes from, the Latin America. He's saying the kingdom. Oh, yeah. I must say the kingdom of KwaZulu-Natal. And then Mkosi Kolo is also from the kingdom, Port Shepton, the kingdom. Mpindi Chukunga is from Mpumalanga, very beautiful place. I had a holiday there the other day, and it was very nice. Better than KwaZulu-Natal. And then Mr. James Self, also from this unpredictable weather here, Cape Town. I want to remove to shift to pass a motion in Parliament that we shift the Parliament from where to the police. And then the civil citizen also from the kingdom, for Shepton, where she's fighting for the new prison, for Shepton. Cindy, really, she is our committee secretary. That's Renee Lawrence. She is in my office today. I hope that there's our researcher, for the commissioner. He is the researcher of the committee, not an ANC researcher, a researcher of parliament. he is doing research for the committee. That is the members. The other members will join us. We are a committee of 13 members. Other members will join us later. As I have said, Mr. Pito and Mr. Wayne, about the others will join us.
Thank you, Chair. I was a bit confused, I must confess, by the honourable member of the parliamentary monitoring group sitting between Ms. Chikungu and so that's probably the new member here.
Oh, I see. All right. There's a lot of new parties as well here. Yeah. Maybe I could have also made a mistake. There's a lot of new parties after the crossing of the floor. But Mr. Stevenson has stopped the crossing of the floor. So maybe the member was part and parcel of a new one-man party.
I will not refer to any of these unpredictables because I may not know what it is you're referring to. I've introduced my delegation, separate honourable members. I'm here today with Mr. Smallberger, who is the Regional Commissioner of the Western Cape. You know, Mr. Smallberger. We have the Regional Commissioner of Gauteng, Advocate Corby, on my left. We have the Regional Commissioner of KwaZulu-Natal, Mr. Nhleko. And then with him, we decided to bring in the Area Commissioner for Empangeni, in that area, Kabakabusha Falls, Mr. Nele. And then, of course, Ms. Val Shabalala, who is the Director of Management Secretariat. Chairperson, I'm not going to spend too much time because I think we should really get into the details of three very painful experiences that we've been through, although we're talking about these events having happened in different years. The fact that it's before this portfolio committee in one session obviously creates its own sense about the concentration of three events that really, to some extent, expose the soft underbelly of the Department of Correctional Services. I think you have asked the department chairperson to really share with this committee to build an understanding of what it is that we are confronting. And I can assure you that we have learned the value of openly engaging with this portfolio committee and the benefits that it can provide to the department. So we're quite keen to do exactly that. By its very nature, I must add that when a security institution, when it comes to some of these matters, we've, sometimes it's been a bit difficult. And you have said that let's deal with the facts. And let's build that understanding. But we know it's quite difficult for various reasons. On the one hand, we may deal with a matter that's either still under investigation and so therefore place serious limits on us, not only in terms of ensuring that we do perform our accountability function when being called before the committee, but that we also make sure that we do not compromise what is in the interest the best interest of the state and the people when it comes to matters of security. So obviously that sometimes places limitations of us. Of course, in other cases we may have situations that or incidents that fall before the court, and I'm here referring to some civil action that I have to once again make the committee aware of, that we know there's civil action arising from the Grotesquine escape that we still have to deal with. And in as far as we are saying we will have to make information available, it is always difficult when you have pending cases. But notwithstanding that, I think we do accept the fact that this committee is entitled to information. And where it's necessary, Chairperson, I will really indicate, and and ask the committee's indulgence around some of these matters that we will have to deliberate on. Indeed, Chairperson, I think I've said on the one hand that we're coming here to talk about three incidences that collectively create a sense of this institution, and I was just commenting on some members as I greeted them that I wish we could be here to talk about the things that doesn't go wrong. But given the fact that we're a security institution and that we operate within a situation of ongoing risk, things do go wrong, and sometimes horribly so. And in the cases before us, they have gone wrong. You have pointed out that the three cases in particular, but even outside of that, the Martius case and others, we are showing as BCS that we are not immune to the phenomena of organized crime and the extent to which organized crime syndicates target correctional sentence. And whilst I do not want to preempt the debate, I think we need to also understand that some of these things happen within particular contexts, within centers, and each center, its management area within BCS, I must add, has its own characteristics, its own sense of what defines it, and therefore what makes certain things possible. I think certain things is more likely to happen at some centers, not only because of the type of people it accommodates, but also because of other historical factors, the type of personnel we have, the type of infrastructure and the purpose why it was built, and so on. But those things we will come back to later. Safe to say you've latched on to two issues that I think we need to at the outset also clarify. That when talking about these things, keeping into perspective that there's been a number of initiatives undertaken by DCS over recent years to really make sure that any escape that happens from within our facility must be approached with the seriousness it deserves. I think while you have acknowledged that the number of serious escapes have reduced over the years, that's cold comfort for us when an escape, especially an escape from a maximum facility, happens. We must give it the necessary seriousness. Of course, we are not close to the possibility of people escaping because of our focus on rehabilitation from work teams and the risk, largely also from people as they're being escorted to hospitals and to court. But on the whole, any escape from a correctional center must be viewed with the seriousness that it deserves. And so despite our efforts to improve our security through installing all kinds of equipment, we still see that there are some of these unfortunate events. But just to give members some sense, and since you've raised the Chairperson, I've just asked someone to pull for me the escape statistics over the last 5 years. And I think the trend clearly shows that awaiting trial inmates being classified as generally as maximum inmates. In 2004, for example, we had 84 escapes of maximum unsentenced inmates. Those who were sentenced in 2004, we had 7. In 2005, we were talking about 55 unsentenced and 6 sentenced. 2006, 44 unsentenced and 2 sentenced. In 2007, we talk about 17 unsentenced escapees and 12 sentenced ones. Of course, the 12 includes the 10 under discussion at Kalakabusha itself. And in 2008, this year so far, touch wood, because we're not going to talk about these things, tend to happen. In 2008, we so far had 7 unsentenced escapes and 0 sentenced. So what I'm trying to illustrate is whilst we are looking at three incidences, our commitment to dealing with the issue of providing safe custody is a serious one. And also at the outset to say that given the fact that we're confronted with organized crime, and I must announce to this committee that we are working very closely with our partners in the South African Police Intelligence Services Directorate as well as the National Intelligence Agency to assess on an ongoing basis our vulnerability when dealing with the issues of organized crime. And out of this, in fact, we will be, when I leave here on Thursday, we will have our executive management meeting, and there will be a presentation by the NIA and the police intelligence together with a structure that deals with communication security to give us the findings of the vulnerability assessment and therefore for us to again look at measures to introduce to confront this issue of organized crime operating from within these areas. Chairperson, lastly, and I think it's very important to say that for us, escapes don't only happen, or rather the concern around escapes is not only because we see someone who's been committed to us to be held in safe custody getting away, but I think it's a worrying matter that must, I think, and therefore we appreciate the concern of this committee. It must concern us because very often, and more often than not, there are other people who also suffer the consequences and the brunt of these escapes. In our facilities, we are dealing here with people, with thousands of honest, hardworking correctional officials who, as you know, who must depend to a large measure on absolute trust of another colleague. And when that trust is broken because of allegations or belief that there may be collusion, it really hits at the heart of an organization like DCS. And so this issue of collusion of staff and the extent to which certain elements within our organization remain corrupt is something of serious concern, and therefore we must commit to pursuing them vigorously. It's not only the issue of trust and human life of people who have committed themselves to work within our facilities, but also where we do have members dying as a result of such security breaches. And again, whilst reflecting on the Grootskeer incident, we again reminded of the fact that some of our members, particularly Mr. Horn, lost his life. And besides that, people being very close to him, we do not underestimate the extent to which they've been traumatized. So these are real issues about real people and real pain. And therefore, when you ask us to explain, we will have to keep that in mind. Chairperson, with that brief introduction, I would ask, therefore, Commissioner Smallberger to take us back to the issues around Grootskeer. And knowing that we've been here before, and there's also been responses to questions, we may not hit the nail on its head in terms of what the questions are that you may want to have answered, and we remain open to respond to that through questions by the committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, let me first find out, all the members, you have the presentation, all of you, man.
Chairperson and portfolio committee members. I will start with the Grootskeer incident, and I hope everybody's on the same page. It's the heading is background. I can just start by saying that the incident that we are presenting happened on the 14th of March 2005, and the investigating team was appointed on 17 March, and I will deal later with more detail. In terms of the background, just the first bullet there, defendant Lunga Luk was arrested in connection with cash in transit robbery, as well as escape from police custody on 30 October 2004. And he was admitted at Paulsmoor on the 3rd of November 2004. On 14 March 2005, the emergency support team, also referred to as the EST members, escorted awaiting trial offender Lunga Luk to Grootsteen Hospital. Whilst waiting in the reception area, the EST members were attacked by unknown assailants. The late Mr. Horan, who was the EST member, was fatally injured, and the team leader of the EST, Mr. Hendrik, was wounded. The Commissioner already referred to the fact that we were already in the past year in the Portfolio Committee. The first briefing was on 10 August 2005, and then there was a follow-up on other issues, but then the issue of protesteer was also raised on the 5th of June 2007, where a brief update was provided, and there were three areas that were briefed. We'll use that for the brief. Administrative improvements implemented. Maybe just to refresh, we referred then to the general management of Paulsmoor by then in 2005. It's the interdict against the appointment of the head of center by then. The signing of a service level agreement with the Department of Health. The security arrangement with security agents, and also the back to basic principle. That was just in a nutshell what we discussed on the first. And then we also provided feedback on the disciplinary case taken and the status of disciplinary cases, and also the report of the South African Police Service into the criminal investigation. And here also on the 13th of November, hearing the security incident presentation, there was also mention made and also referred to the protesteer issue, and also highlighted again that there are still some outstanding matters on the protesteer incident. Here's the investigation. The investigation was, an independent team was appointed on the 17th of March. They concluded their investigation on the 9th of May, and it was forwarded to the for a decision, and the final decision was taken on the 24th of June 2005. Chair, the findings of the investigation report. Firstly, offender Luke was escorted to Grootsteen Hospital by the EST member for a medical appointment. Also, just to refresh the memories of the Portfolio Committee by saying that we are admitting offenders from court, specifically awaiting trial, with a committal warrant with very less information. And initially on that specific morning of the 14th of March, a member, not part of the ESC, was appointed to do the escort duty, and then an official was alerting the management that the offender Luke was regarded as a high-risk offender, and the acting head by then have taken the decision that the EST need to do the escort duties. And the team leader by then, and still at Paulsmoor, Mr. Mark Hendrik, was then consulted by the head of center by then, and been assigned to do the escort of this offender to court. Chair, also to mention that the offender was on his way to hospital for an incident that happened where the police shot him before he was incarcerated at Paulsmoor, and he was admitted and incarcerated at the hospital section, and subsequently moved to a single cell. And what what was also identified as part of the finding is that the offender was informed four times of his appointment on the 14th of March. The four members escorted the offender with a panel van as well as his son to the hospital. The members, the four, were not in possession of bulletproof vests and did not wear it during the escort. The members were issued with 9mm pistols and Mr. Horan with a 9R4 rifle. The offender, Luke, was under the direct supervision of Mr. Horan and Hendrik inside the waiting room at the reception area of the hospital, where the attack occurred and the members were shot. Chair, let me also add here to say that the third official of the EST team, whilst they were inside, went to the reception to report their presence, and there were roughly about 500 community members at that area, and at the counter they have given the offender the number of 486 to indicate, you know, he was far down at the queue in the hospital. And when they were on their way, that is now Mr. Hendrik, Oren, and the offender to the J floor, whilst waiting at the lift, Mr. Hendrik was seeing a movement, and even before he could take out his firearm, he was shot. There's also a shot fired at Mr. Oren. And then during this crossfire, it's also alleged that the assailant used an AK-47 rifle for the shots fired at our two officials, that the officials prevented the awaiting trial from being freed by the unknown attacker, and also mentioned in this regard that our team leader was very brave. While being shot, he also returned fire, and subsequently, while being shot, he lied over the offender to prevent him to escape. And again, just the last bullet, Chairperson, is just to say that we also identified the weaknesses that I admit awaiting for our detainees as, you know, with very limited information. And I know there was also another assignment by the portfolio committee that we were still need to come back, and I think we will be during that presentation to respond more broadly on what is the department and other role players that the judge is doing, and what is to issue of relevant information where we don't have any information concerning this, etc., etc. Chairperson, the disciplinary action against the officials identified during the investigation, there were decisions taken that 8 officials need to be disciplined. 2 were found guilty and received a written warning. 3 official cases were withdrawn. 1 was acquitted, 1 was dismissed for another unrelated case, and 1 of our officials unfortunately passed away before conclusion of the investigation and the subsequent disciplinary measures. Chairperson, in terms of remedial action, as a measure that was implemented, the identified high-profile offenders, we endorsed their file, the warrants with a red pen to make it visible. Offender Luke was, after he was released from hospital, he was transferred to another maximum detention center in the Western Cape. We have nominated officials that liaise with the hospitals for appointments. There's effective interaction with the EST, Emergency Support Team, who receiving refresher training, and as its policy were also ordered to wear bulletproof vests. High profile offenders are escorted and accompanied by EST members to hospital, and the affected officials were also referred for debriefing session. On the next page, there was also what we call the stakeholder interaction. We had several meetings with Groote Schuur Hospital. There was also interaction with the Delivery Police Services. But one of the most important issues that come from this very tragic incident was the signing of a service level agreement to determine the protocols between Correctional Services as well as the Provincial Health Department. And I think that is a very positive step. The service level agreement, Chair, is a very comprehensive document, but just to name a few, there's a specific annexure to the service level agreement that deal with security measures, that spell out the responsibility of the Department of Health towards Correctional Services, and also with regard to high-profile offenders, as well as Correctional Services' responsibility in terms of the management and the securing of appointments and what's supposed to happen. Here we highlighted a few bullets there to inform the hospital in advance of higher offenders, reduce the treatment of minor medical cases at the hospital. The portfolio committee is also aware that we also do have now an internal doctor at Portsmouth that also assists and also manages the minor cases down. And also then measures in place to have strict confidentiality on the handling of appointments. That is also being covered by the service level agreement. High risk offenders are held in separate designated areas to prevent what happened there. And then it was also identified that there were really no metal detectors anything at the hospital, and there's also improvement of security in hospital. Chairperson, what is still pending from this investigation is the criminal charges that is investigated by South African Police Service. We've received towards the end of April after another follow-up with that they are confirming that the case is still ongoing. They are still gathering information. But again, Chair, if further detail is needed, I can provide the information to the Chair. But one is also cautioned and taking cognizance of other investigating officials that were shot in the Western Cape, and therefore I would prefer that we are not giving the particulars of the investigating officer in the open session. The last bullet, claims against the department, that is basically the area the commissioner also referred to, and two areas in this regard, Chairperson. The one area is the direct claims against the department. That refers to letters that we received from the attorneys from three individuals. It is from the late Mr. Horan's wife, as well as from Mr. Hendricks, as well as from Mr. LaRue. And that matter is still not being concluded. The second part is also the injuries on duty, referring there to the compensation commissioner, that is, as you are aware, outside Correctional Services, also dealing with some of the outstanding issues. Chair, thank you.
If I may just get some indication, should we cover the presentations and then come for discussion?
No, let me deal with this one.
This one?
And then we go to...
Honorable Chair, then I would like to submit it back to you for better than coffee.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Harberger, Commissioner. Members, there's a presentation. are going to take questions for clarification, and then we'll decide what we are going to do for way forward. Mr. Mahmoudi, Mr. Chikunga. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chair. There are a few questions that I would like to put to you, please. When you talk about the administrative improvements that you've implemented at this institution, I'd like to know exactly what those improvements are. With regard to the investigation having been concluded in June, we've been, as a portfolio committee, asking about this on and off now all these years, and we kept on being told matters still under investigation, fund investigation. Why did it take until now before we get any report back on this investigation? I'm talking about a decent report back. I'm not talking about being told that the matter is still ongoing. We've been querying it, and it only came out in a minister's statement that we've now got this investigation concluded in 2005, and it takes until 2008 for the report thereof to come to the portfolio committee, notwithstanding the fact that we keep asking for information. With regard to the findings and the establishing that the members were in possession of bulletproof vests but not wearing them, I am given to understand that that's a sort of general practice not to wear them, that there's no standing regulation insisting that they wear, at that stage, that they wear them. Is it now obligatory for members to wear these bulletproof vests? And I'm also given to understand that the members have continuously asked for bulletproof vehicles to travel in. Has anything been done in this regard since that incident to ensure that the ESC members are in fact in bulletproof vehicles when they escort people to prison? I would like to know that this individual found guilty were given written warnings. What were they found guilty of that they were only merely given written warnings? Why were they not discharged? So we need to know more on that. We need to know what the offences were and why they were merely given serious written warnings. I'm given to understand that the one member that passed away during this investigation, one of the eight members that were disciplinary charges were taken, put in place, I'm given to understand that none of those members have passed away other than Mr. Horn. In fact, it was the chair of the disciplinary committee that passed away, not, in fact, and one of the members involved in this incident. Chair, with regard to remedial action, I would like to know what refresher courses have been given to these people subsequent to this particular incident. Where and when? If I'm of the opinion that nothing has happened at this stage, there have been no refresher courses, notwithstanding the fact that members have been requesting them, there have been no refresher courses. I'd also like to know where offender Lunga Luke is at the present time. We're given to understand he's a high profile offender, and yet I'm given to understand that he may well be in Goodwood Prison, which is hardly a maximum security prison. The criminal charges, we've heard that there's still some criminal charges on the go. Are we talking about criminal charges against the people that have already been investigated by the department? Does it involve all of those that have been found guilty and been given serious warnings, etc.? We want to know who these people are still against, or what the criminal charges are still against. Obviously, with regards to claims, I'm not particularly interested in that stage. It's got nothing really to do with us, but we need more information. There are a number of things that don't run true. We keep on talking about having improved the situation. Are our members now all forced to wear these security vests? Do we have proper training in place? I think that there are a number of questions that need to be answered in this regard. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. I think some of my questions are covered by this. But I'd also like to agree with the Commissioner, Chairperson.
at some point, I think we need to talk about who's the environment. Because there's a lot of people who get this stand up in the country. But the chairperson, I remember in the last presentation about this incident, given in your summary, we were not happy that people that are directly involved, people that are from Baltimore, and were not dead and seen again. No one from Baltimore was dead. But I'm not going to make an issue out of that. The investigation, as Ms. Sitton has said, we just hear disciplinary action. What were the chances of the misconduct, or what exactly were these people charged for? Again, Jefferson, linking this to this incident, to what we always ask, how far is the department on vetting the officials? And Mr. Smallberger mentioned they are not getting enough information from court about awaiting trial detainees. What are they doing? He mentioned about the other stakeholders that they are busy with. But how far is that? What follow-up are they making? And how ready like that? Mr. Sitter mentioned the question that I had about LEPCO gas. About external investigation. So this one, for me, I'm really... Because it creates a problem, because there are things that we cannot ask because of the external investigation that has not been completed. Maybe what? I know it does not depend on them. It depends on those agents that are doing it. But is there any mechanism that can be used so that at least when the Department of Correctional Services has finished its investigation, it does not take years for the external investigators to complete, so that when they present a report, they present a comprehensive report. And lastly, who conducts this request process? The part of that question has been asked by him. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and I think the former speakers have covered me in many ways, but I think therefore I will probably ask one question on the internal remedial action. It says the five of high profile offenders are marked in red when admitted, and I just want to know as to what this means to an official who is admitting that person. What is she expected or he expected to do about such an offender? Is it a local policy or a national policy that any other official will know what to do when he or she receives an offender with a red mark on the file? I just want to know that. What does it mean?
Sorry,
you
are harassing me.
Let me tell you, when one of the members
are presenting, I'm listening very attentively so that if anything that a member is saying, I'm here to buy. Now you are harassing me, Mr. Jim, too.
I've got your attention. Thank you very much, Kevin. Two questions I forgot to ask. When I hear the word file, I remember that I wanted to ask a question. I am also given to understand that the police file on this matter has in fact disappeared. Is this the case? I'm told that they're busy trying to reconstruct the file, which concerns me seriously, and how did that file disappear? Do we know anything more about that? Secondly, I was also under the impression that one of the members had actually given information to the offender. We were told at the time that the offender had been given information by one of the members. Has that member been disciplined at all? And what were the findings of that particular incident? was that member involved in that whole process or not? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mukoti Tolo. Your mic, Mukoti Tolo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. One of the bullets here says, whilst working in the reception area, the ESC members were attacked by unknown assailants. I want to believe that these assailants went through the normal gate and were not searched.
Is that the hospital?
At the hospital, yes.
Yeah, this is at the hospital.
Oh.
Not at the prison.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Continue with your question.
I want to believe, Mr. Chairperson, that they were not searched and they went straight to where Mr. Horn and Mr. Hendrick were. And these two officials were fatally injured and the other one wounded. Now, now I want to find out from this department, were there any immediate steps taken to have these assailants arrested there and then to avoid any further injuries either of the hospital officials or any other civil men walking about? And secondly, I want to find out what was the findings on the negligence and the part of the officials, of the security of the officials. Are they not supposed to arrest, to make alarms or to arrest anyone who is regarded as these assailants were, regarded as dangerous to the all civilians in and about the hospital? Thank you.
Over to you, Department. Members, I think that was a question on politics. I haven't three briefings, and I don't want us to go on and on. This is a briefing on the question. We are going to get answers from here and have maybe two follow-up, if there's follow-up. I have said that we are going to sit as a portfolio committee with this report so that we must also draft our own. Commissioner, thank you very much.
I'm in a bit of a predicament here, and you can see the predicament is, I have to really ask the committee. The predicament is that, in fact, we have a series of questions being asked about the matter that's in court, in referring you to the civil claim. And you may also be aware that one of the members who indeed lodged the civil claim against the state is in the session. As an accounting officer, I'm not a legal expert, but I would perhaps ask
who is
Mr. Mark Hendricks is sitting there behind the seat.
And he has lodged?
He's lodged the civil claim. Arising from this incident. It's giving me, without saying that
I... Yeah. Okay, let's leave it to the process. Can you please turn outside so that the comments you want to express before we... That's an issue now. There's one member of the team here who was directly involved.
I really also would like to consult with my top management.
as we respond, to be aware of what it is we're dealing with. It's not a, I'm not a legal person, but I would like to consult with the legal people on this. So I would perhaps ask if we could just have a 5 minutes to turn
yeah.
the
Yeah, I also time. Want to consult with the
Yeah.
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 You are seeing.
Unfortunately, I have not had the benefit of having my advisors who are familiar with the issues of legality with me, although I have some legal expertise and functioning in a different capacity. I think the discussion that we've had amongst colleagues outside was that it's one of those difficulties where we do have to account. But I think this is what we're bedeviling, I think, this case. Because notwithstanding the fact that we've been here over and over, and we've, I think, if we go through the records, we can see that some of the same details we've shared. I've just looked at the minutes of the PMG, where we've covered the same time. It's quite clear that we're dealing here with the matter that is sub judice, and I'm really urging the chairperson of this honourable committee to make a ruling to help us. I'm not that familiar with the rules of parliament, but with the matter being before the court and us clearly in the series, 90% of the questions relate to a matter that we can be asked to deal with. When the matter comes to the court, it really complicates. And now, I've even been thinking, even if we say, let's pursue this in a closed session, it still doesn't solve my problem, the issue of it being a sub judice. Now, I need the advice of the chair on how we deal with matters before the court in this committee. I'm really saying I'm asking that. Without having the benefit of my legal people to ask them to explore those issues for me, to advise me. If you're in a position to do so, but not to, I've asked them if they could get me the rules of the assembly, if there's any protection that I can call upon. And there is a rule that says no members shall refer any matter on which a judicial decision is pending. I don't want to suggest it's been referred by a matter, but where there is a judicial decision pending, it obviously places compromise me as the accounting officer quite badly. I'm asking for your guidance.
Let me, you want to say something?
Chairperson, perhaps the one question that I've posed just now that perhaps enlighten us a little bit. My understanding of the situation is that there is a clause in the contract signed by members that says that they cannot pay the department dues. Is that the case? Because if that is the case, then we don't have a substitute situation.
Ms. Sitton, we are not dealing now with the report.
I'm not talking about the report.
No, you are saying that there is a clause in the Department of Correctional Services that states members can't take the department to court, isn't it? That is what you are saying.
Yes, but that's not got to do with the report. I'm merely trying to establish whether, in fact, there is a subjudicated situation given that members
no,
apparently...
No, the commissioner is dealing with the subjudicated yes, in this meeting. The department, there are members taking the department to court.
Chairperson, I understand that. And it's on that question, that's where I have the question. Are members, in terms of the contract they have with the department, entitled to take the department to court? And my understanding is that they don't. So, to my understanding, there is no court case.
Again, a bit confused because it's a basic constitutional right of any citizen to take anyone to court. So I'm being advised that, in fact, we are being sued by staff and others on an ongoing basis.
Before I'm going to make a ruling on this issue, we are still having two other presentations, the one of Kalakabusha and the one of Johannesburg. What is the position there? What is the position on these two presentations? Before I'm making my
room. The Johannesburg matter is a bit more straightforward in terms of we have put information before the committee in the form of a presentation.
We don't have a problem with that.
I only have a problem in relation to not being able to respond directly. I may not be able to respond directly to some of the specific questions. And if you allow me just to explain briefly that I think to put it to the committee that we've had the unfortunate incident. There is an investigation that is a very sensitive thing, because it's not only an investigation to determine what went wrong, but obviously the investigation hinges on getting Mr. Rakot back into prison where he should be. We think that the team working on this matter is quite aware of certain information that can help the case, and we obviously cannot at this stage divulge any information that may compromise that investigation. Also, again, as per your earlier suggestion, we do know of various individuals involved who may be guilty in one way or the other and who we may have to act on. And when you do have an investigation going against certain individuals, any information that comes into the public domain really kind of shoots yourself in the foot. So it's again one of those, I'm saying that I'm keen to account, and we've given some information that establishes what has happened. More or less, but I think there would be some constraint on our ability to engage given the sensitive nature of that investigation. On Kalakabusha, I think we're more able to talk to the issues, but just to report to the committee that firstly, we don't see necessarily any problem in coming back with some of the more pertinent information, as I don't think it will have a direct bearing on the disciplinary cases necessarily that's still outstanding. We do have one outstanding disciplinary case. But I've earlier in my introduction referred to some of these things happening within the context where crime syndicates and organized crime people are active. And quite clearly, we are pursuing a range of these things of, in pursuit of organized syndicates operating around the Kalakabusha Mpangeni area. And again, we would not obviously go into any of the detail there. That may place some limit on this thing. I think we can take Kalakabusha and where it becomes sensitive, I think we may point that out to the committee. But I wouldn't want to say to the committee we shouldn't deal with Kalakabusha. With the court matter, I think we can put the facts before the committee of what happened as it happened. But I think when it, as I'm saying, when it comes to the debate, it may be a bit more difficult. We'll have to take it as the, the issues come up.
And they are feeling like this, that we are talking about the closest people that cover up someone. That's why they are feeling so strong that we must have a briefing where we are going to close that door and sit alone in this room, so that we must get all the facts. You have indicated, Commissioner, as well, the La Court one. You are prepared to give us the details, the facts, what happened there. But when it comes to questions, you are not. It's sensitive, and I agree with you that we must not compromise a solid case that we can have. If you are coming up now. With details, and he's still around and he's still outside. You want to, and we as the public want to see him being arrested. Now we as the committee, we are saying that the one of closest here, we will organize another meeting where we are going to close the door. We are going to have a briefing, totally open briefing, where the members will be free to ask each and every question. You see, there's two processes, Commissioner, according to our understanding. There is the police investigation one side. There is the internal investigation one side. We want to understand. We are not going to go into the police investigation. The police, otherwise we must call the police to come and account. Yes. But the department, the civil citizen is saying the files have disappeared. We also want that information. Is it true or not? And how? And Mr. Civil will say, how does she, where does she get the information from, and whatever, to justify this whole thing. I'm saying we are going to deal with it. With the Kalakabusha one, it's fine. The commissioner can present, but if there is anything that we don't feel comfortable with, we are also going to tell you, commissioner, that come back with all three presentations, so that we mustn't say that no, there's something that the media must not hear or what. We will call you back. I'm saying, commissioner, these members feel that there are cover-ups. They are feeling that. That's why we want openness from your side. I am saying again, we want to assist. And if there's anything that, you know, I went through the briefing of Kalakabusha. I think, personally, I think the commissioner has tried his level best to to address what is there in this thing. And other things that, that the committee feels, it's not there, it's fine. They can ask the question. But I think he has tried to be open. He's an ex-member of Parliament. He understands the committee's work. He has tried his level then to address some of the issues there. Personally, and saying that my person, I went through his report. He was trying very hard to be as open as possible with this. But members, I'm going to give the department a chance. We have agreed that the two other, the La Court one, the commissioner will give us a briefing. No questions on that one. We will come back, and then the other one, courtesy as well. You are going to deal with the two now. Over to you, commissioner.
Jefferson, thank you very much. I'm really grateful that we have set up this treatment and the council with yourself and also with the experts on the matter of Christmas. I really think the unfortunate part with the cyber security incidences, it does leave that sense that there's a cover-up. If we do not subject it to scrutiny and really rigorous questioning, it will always have that kind of thing. What I'll be the first one to admit that we do have collusion when it comes to some of these security breaches in the security institution that is totally intolerable, and we need to expose it and deal with it up front. So let me assure you that I have no interest to cover up. But quite clearly, there's always a tendency, and I know when departments come before this committee to try to justify certain things. And I think if that approach to it closes up to the possibility of learning, then I think it's also something that's negative. So even at the risk of us exposing ourselves to the clumsiness that happens from time to time, we need to do so for the purpose of making sure that not only we account to you, but we also continue to learn and improve on our processes. And it's for that reason that you've said that the Honourable, I was going to call him the Honourable, but he's not an Honourable Regional Commissioner, former Honourable. No, I mean only in the sense that Honourable is a title only referred to certain privileged members. The Commissioner for KwaZulu-Natal, Mr. Nhleko, indeed, will understand the need. In fact, I'm sure he will even go further than what's in the report. So if I may allow to ask him to present, anything for the time. Thank you, Chair.
Over to you, Honourable Commissioner.
No, thanks. Thank you very much, Chairperson. It's one of those things that I do actually wish they would certainly not follow me all the way, but it does happen. I can't shake this thing. Nevertheless, thank you very much. I would want to talk through the report as circulated regarding the Kalagabushi. I think the report will try and indicate three segments of it. The one is what occurred, the other one is what interventions were then made. And I think the one segment of the report will also deal with the question of what progress has been made to date. So that's what we'll try and cover. But before one deals with the obvious, I would like to hint, because I think it's important to also understand the setting under which this particular incident occurred. Before the escape, we had assembled a team involving some regional managers responsible for security and corrections, as well as local managers in around the Mbangani management area. And I had asked them to conduct a security threat analysis, because what I had what we had identified was that there were particular external factors, security issues, that were also somewhat influencing the internal factor, the internal dynamic insofar as Palalawusha is concerned and so it goes. I think the commissioner has referred to some particular aspect of it in terms of the criminal syndicates that are at work and other sort of criminal formations that are also there. So we asked them to do this sort of analysis, and it has been an ongoing sort of task on our part. There were particular incidences that occurred before the escape, which were also quite startling. One of the attempts was when there was a contingent of about five people somewhere in the middle of the night who had to cut through the fence and using an angle grinder to try and cut the bulb of our window. So that was one desperate attempt because they wanted to rescue one of the fellows in the inside, but that movement was detected and therefore the entire thing foiled. So that was one of the attempts prior to the escape. But you also had another attempt where people wanted to invade the correctional center, ambush site. So in that situation, we were able to intercept 3R4 and some other hand weapons and so forth. And we are talking about the Kumbi that just went through and was parked at the entrance of the correctional center. But that was the plan. The plan was that they needed to rescue one of theirs. And this was broad daylight, basically, when it occurred. So these were some of the frantic attempts that took place, which then prompted the regional management to then decide that it was going to be proper to do a comprehensive security threat analysis, particularly concentrating on the external factors and so forth. Now, I'm mentioning these things because it would be important, and I think as work proceeds around this issue, specifically around Palalawusha, I think there is likelihood that we'll uncover more of the issue. So we all know that on the 4th of August, there was then the escape that took place there. And clearly, the signals are that when that escape was staged, the circumstance itself was properly sort of studied. One of the issues that we studied, I think, by the escapees was the fact that it was during the visitation sort of period, when you have quite a lot of in and out kind of movement because you have been. The other factor also was that you also had some of you follow these big things that happen. Some of us are social drugs. But, there was a big match between pirates and cable ships. And that, of course, on top of the fact that it was the weekend. Now, during the weekend, your staffing establishment is not normal. The weekend establishment is a different sort of structural setting altogether. Now, but also, one of the issues that had been detected is that the electric fence was not active. And this is the fence that was used. Now, the simple reason for why the electric fence that we have was deactivated at the time is precisely because it continuously triggered what we call the hoax alarm. What's the correct English? I don't know. False alarm. Yes. precisely because the contractor that must have installed that thing did not study the fact that you have a lot of humidity in that area. So this thing responds to humidity. Humidity also means moisture in the air, but also lots of coastal winds and so on. So it's continuously this thing would trick off this false alarm, which also on its own is also with another, a security threat in one form or the other, which then prompted that management on the spot decided to deactivate. But that's a matter that we're also attending to, which I will also deal with. We will also deal with as and when we proceed with this particular presentation. Now, I'm not going to deal with the question of who were the inmates that escaped from Unit A and Unit 12, but I would want to look into the question of what interventions were made after the escape. We made some few interventions. One of those interventions was the question of setting up a joint task team between the South African Police Service and ourselves in terms of tracking and tracing the whereabouts of those particular inmates. The Departmental Investigation Unit commenced with the investigation on the 8th of August. As a result, during this particular period of investigation, we initially suspended 18 at the initial stages. But as and when we were investigating, we would then uncover more other issues that would either implicate one or two other individuals and so forth. And therefore, as a result, the number of suspended officials increased from 18 to 21. We also worked with the National Intelligence Agency and the South African Police Service in following through an investigation. Because of the number of officials that were suspended, we also needed to basically make up and complement for the number of personnel that was no longer going to be used for the suspension, so we had to source the additional support from other areas to come and reinforce our work in that area. I think I spoke about the question of the security analysis. Now, the findings out of the investigation showed that generally there was gross negligence on the side of people that needed to operate most of this particular function. That also there was a culture and practice of non-compliance that seemed to have been in existence. So, in other words, laxity around question of security procedures, policies, and other related matters. So you had also that kind of problem that was generally there amongst members of our staff. And that the escape itself, and this is where also some of the but maybe I may want to come back to this point and then when we engage in further discussion. It does appear that the escape itself was in the offing for quite some time. I think it's also an issue that relates to the work that we had to do before the escape. Safe to say that the work that we had to do was concentrating on the external factor. Now the escape was more of an internal factor. Now, but also interestingly is that it appears that information relating to escape was known somewhere, but it was not known to the center management. So it's something that somebody would come up and say, but yeah, this is what I heard, and I told so and so about this thing, and so it goes. But then that was never brought to the authority in charge of that particular center in the form of center management. That's a different set of a problem on its own, and that's where also the ongoing work with crime intelligence, in particular of the South African Police Service, becomes critical. Why is it that you had a person who possessed a piece of information relating to the escape or the planned escape, and that information was not then surrendered to people that should have acted and done something about that information? So I think that's a different thing. In terms of the findings, in terms of the other issues that we identified, was that there was lack of management and supervisory control over inmates, particularly movement control, and officials in the on the day in question. AU. I think this point could also be amplified by other factors that we identified. The setting under which on the day in question was this being looked at, the football match, so you had quite a number of offenders that must have been viewed on some screens watching the match, possibly also quite a sizable amount of officials viewed on also watching the match somewhere. You know, those are some of probably the influencing factors. Also visitation, the question of at that time. The main control room and the support unit control room were poorly operated on the day in question. One observation also made by the investigation is that Kalagabusha, the correctional center, was built as a medium unit. However, in these days, because of the change in the character of the offender population as well as the character of criminality in South Africa, generally speaking, we also do find ourselves housing a maximum offenders there. And I do want to stress this point because there's only one center in KZN that was designed as a maximum center, and that's a Bongwe. All other centers, when they were built, their category went up to medium. But basically, you do have people whom we incarcerate that serve 90 years, 200 years, whatever, in some of the centers. I think it's Kalagabusha is not an exception. I'm not trying to say that Kalagabusha should then be understood to be an exception from the rest of what characterizes all generally. Okay, in terms of the type of the offender population that we incarcerate in most of the centers. Now, the investigation report also identified inadequacies, in other words, in terms of the number of the level of staffing vis-a-vis the offender population and so on. And that's also a matter that we are looking into in terms of, you know, how this problem and then be overcome. A security infrastructure was also identified. One of the interventions that we had made earlier on prior to the escape itself was also to look at the security equipment. Because I think as and when people were attempting to come into that correctional center, we were also deriving lessons out of that. We also noticed that there were areas that were somewhat that could be termed as blind spots. In other words, where you do not have, you may have a camera there, but it has a blind spot, so it doesn't cover a particular angle and so on. So we also noticed that we needed to do some upgrades. Of course, the security fence in terms of the electrical malfunction, we also needed to do something with that, with regard to that. There was I think one of the questions that could be asked in terms of what generally do we think are the factors that must have led to that everything. How would we want to characterize that? I would probably say that you had the combination of two factors. You had the one factor dealing with the whole question of how, from a human resources management point of view, how that particular segment of functioning was performed. The other one is, of course, infrastructural issues, you know, cameras, the question of the fence, and whatever. But the combination of the two factors are things that we would argue that they were taken advantage of in one form or the other. But there was generally, as observed by the report, that we were experiencing poor work ethics and don't care attitude towards policies and procedures in observing security issues in particular. Lack of enforcing discipline by line managers. Lack of management and leadership by managers, so also clearly issues that the investigation report had to bring forward. Now, in terms of interventions and progress that has been made thus far, we will want to reflect on that as the last segment of this presentation. We had indicated earlier on when we began with this presentation that we ended up with 21 officials that had been suspended, but in the process, of course, you know, you would then be uplifting the way it was, it has been necessary for us to uplift a suspension. But all in all, we then ended up with 13 officials that had to face the disciplinary action. We finalized 11 disciplinary cases. 8 officials have been dismissed. 2 officials acquitted, 1 official demoted, and there are 2 cases pending because of those particular 2 officials that lodged the appeal. But also, as the management, we had to address members on the findings of the investigation and sensitize them on issues of compliance. In other words, these very same matters that we're now talking about here, some of them, are issues that we have to address the general staffing component there about the year, the issues that have been identified, and therefore we need to correct them. Also, the area management has been drawn in terms of a hands-on approach on day-to-day sort of the management of the institution. Unit managers have been located as an effort to supplement the current need for supervision and control. Labor formations were also engaged on the findings of the investigation report and required intervention. We have also intensified our work with the South African Police Service to institute criminal investigations against certain officials. As we speak, there is ongoing work by the South African Police Service affecting 3 officials. And that's a criminal investigation. You must remember the bulk of the investigation referred to in this presentation is departmental, in other words, it's internal. But there are these 3 officials that the South African Police Service, specifically crime intelligence, that are working on. We also had to try and intensify efforts around issues of communication and security, improving level of communication with our members in Galagabush about some of these particular matters. On security and issues of inmates, the 10 escapees, all of them have been recaptured. Two of them were shot dead during the rearrest, and 8 of them have now been transferred to a bomb in the CIMAC. We have effected administrative measures with regard to movement control of offenders. During visits, we have also implemented a control register, and visitors are now expected to produce ID documents for visitation purposes. We also had to improve security procedures at the entrance gate. The 200 maximum inmates were transferred to other centers within the region. And we are currently in the process of looking into the case of 1,000 other offenders from that center, Galagabush, who are serving, some of them serving life sentences and long sentences. I think I've mentioned the issue of the constant sharing of security information with other security departments. Now, the last area is around infrastructural issues that has had to we have had to intensify also our engagement with the Department of Public Works, and we are happy to report that on the issue of replacing of the dam on mesh in passages in passages with steel bars, around the Department of Public Works through what they call the Repair and Maintenance Program, has allocated $26.4 million for purposes of improving the security infrastructure. That's just basically on the question of erecting the perimeter fence. I think that's correct, in its perimeter fence. And I know I do that. I'm sorry. I know I do that. And of course, the diamond mesh that at some point was also knocked off by the escapees and once we want steel bars there. So there is this the amount that has been allocated for that purpose. You remember during this presentation we spoke about some blind spots when it comes to CCTV and video cameras and so on. In other words, some other angles that are not captured. For instance, one of the examples is that the actual roof of the tent is not covered by any cover. The roof itself, right on top of it. And it's a new generation kind of tent. We all accept that. But if I were to push my way up and scale the wall and hit the roof, there is no security monitoring system that will be, take my movement up. So I can do that, jump onto the other side, and of course the rest is history, I think. So for that, they are putting aside $8.3 million for purposes of improving the overall security system, the electronics and so on. In the control rooms, they will also be putting aside $8.2 million for that. Now, security lighting and X-ray machines and metal detectors, they are allocating $851,000. And for intercom and public address systems, which probably would help in to eliminate this problem where some of these offenders, for whatever strange reason, they would then be carrying the two-way radio to also control the question of the visit and calling out names and so on. So if you have a proper intercom system, it would surely be controlled in one particular point and be able to disseminate whatever information that you want to reach a particular section and so on, and whether calling out a particular offender or something like that. So we hope it will be able to address that. So for that, the $607,000 for that. Now, and beautifully, the fire detection system, which also they have allocated $370,000 for that. So I don't know how much this the total up, but this then accounts for the amount of progress. No, it's actually a result of this ongoing interaction between the Department of Correctional Services and the Department of Public Works in trying to address the issues. In that sense. So I think Chairperson, I would want to leave it at that in terms of what happens, what interventions were made, and of course what progress has been made so far with regards to the issue. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner. I think that just to pick up on some of the issues highlighted by the regional commissioner, issues perhaps not highlighted as much as I may have wanted to. Chairperson, let me say firstly that when looking and studying the report on the Salakabusha escape and the circumstances that gave rise to it is very disconcerting. The one issue that I have to put on the table for members of the committee to know is that prior to the escape, for months prior to that, management was aware that some of the inmates amongst the tent were planning an escape. We were aware of that. What irks me is the fact that between Kanaka Busha, the regional office and head office, I can tell you I've never seen such red tape when it comes to an attempt on the part of management to have these inmates transferred to Ebongweni itself. And I'm saying this having noted the point made by the regional commissioner that there are no other maximum security facilities. So it was very worrying to see that lack of responsiveness and understanding of urgency on the part of managers. And so therefore, that's the question that I kept on asking, looking beyond merely the escape that happened. When confronted with the possibility of an escape, what is it that management, even if when we look at an explanation on the part of different people involved in deciding who is admitted to the super maximum facility, that most of these inmates didn't qualify to go there. Whilst waiting on the final decision, quite clearly there was an obligation on the part of management to make sure that alternative ways are found to limit and mitigate this possibility of the escape. And it's for that reason that I've said, Chairperson, that we must begin to ask the question to hold managers to account and to check against management culpability. And indeed, I've asked the Departmental Investigation Unit to look at that angle for me, and they've come up with a report, and they've made recommendations that some managers should be charged and be held accountable. So that's the one thing that I wanted to highlight. That yes, indeed, whilst we may not have had information specific to the escape on that particular day, we were aware that there was an escape risk that we had to deal with. Chairperson, in the other sense, that I won't blame the committee if we get a sense that if we look at this escape in the report, and more recently we compare that to the circumstances around the escape that we've seen at CIMAC, the Mati escape, then the findings to a large extent are the same. The stereotypical entries into journals, the fact that members are not following operational procedures, there was a soccer game that evening. On the one hand, it clearly points that there are people gathering intelligence. It's not my official. The inmates are watching our every move, and we should not underestimate that. But clearly, it points to something that we must accept, and that is the fact that there's a lack of control, and it's very damning for a security establishment when you cannot put your confidence in your control and accountability of your staff. So I think these things create a sense that after having now gone through the process, done our investigation, again, the last thing that we want to see is for us to respond incrementally to these matters and constantly have knee-jerk responses to these kind of security breaches. And I'm glad, Chairperson, I see a series of presentations that we will be making before this committee for you to look at those things in context. First and foremost, we've had on a number of occasions now seen that we are most vulnerable over weekends. And I know members will raise the issue about staff levels and whether we have sufficient numbers. And that's been an issue that we constantly had to engage on at this committee. Whilst I will say that we will never have enough, but I think our project of implementing a seven-day establishment for us to ensure that we do have the same numbers throughout and that we operate our facilities on a 24-hour, 7-day basis should really help us to overcome some of these challenges. So what I'm pointing to is that rather than for us also to focus on the knee-jerk type of responses, also just to remind the committee of some of the more longer-term initiatives. I've referred to some other processes that we are putting in place. We've recently asked that we have a dedicated focus on security enhancement in DCS, because despite, as I've reported earlier on, the improvement in the level of security, we cannot say that our people are safe either inside or outside until we really curb all kinds of escapes from our maximum facilities. So, Chair, I thought I just wanted to highlight knowing that these will be issues that members are concerned by, and to upfront acknowledge that there is a pattern that's emerging when looking at some of these high profile escapes. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. And I must thank Regional Commissioner Teto for for this very straightforward and honest report. One thing, Commissioner, that I listened very carefully. You see, Commissioner Nkeko is saying there was a pirate and chief on that team. The same when Mate escaped. That was also the reason given to us. There was this mention of pirate and chief. Now, I don't know if other teams are playing or what's happening. I don't understand this. But, Commissioner, the other thing that really worries me is they move through all gates without hindrance. Cut the diamond mesh of the passage and cut the wire fence. Very well. Commissioner, inmates are with two-way radios. They are moving up and down with two-way radios. We can't say that is the prison. When inmates are running the place, they are calling visitors to visit. It's a very serious issue to me, and I'm sure to the committee as well, that we are sitting here with very dangerous inmates, life sentence, 200 years sentence. They are controlling a radio. You know, you showed us the CCTV thing. These people were greeting the officials when they moved out. Bye-bye. They were standing at the gate. Right? Now this, your presentation, Commissioner, I'm saying it's a very honest and open thing. It really says what we saw on that film, that these people were saluting because they were having two-way radios to say that the coast is clear now, come out and leave those things. But members, there's the presentation, let's ask questions and go over to the other presentation. Mr. Self, Mrs. Chikunga, Mr. Nkosi Tolo, and Baba, Bishop Tolo.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. One of the questions partially being covered by the National Commissioner's supplementary explanation, but it would have seemed to me that, as I understood it, there were two previous attempts to break these people out, and it would have seemed to me that it was quite apparent that an incident was brewing at that particular prison. Question is, what capacity does the department have internally for acquiring and sharing intelligence around these sorts of matters? That's the first question. Second question is this. I'm delighted by what we hear about the improved infrastructure within the prison to prevent this sort of escape from happening. But you can have any amount of equipment. In the end, it's operated by an individual. And the question that I need to ask is, to what extent are officials that are working in facilities, particularly in maximum facilities, subjected to continuous security assessments to ensure that they are not the target of organized crime syndicates, and to prevent them from becoming susceptible to bribery? Just on a final note, Chair, I must say that the soccer thing fascinates me. And I suppose by the end of 2010 we'll all be out, because I guess there are so many soccer matches on that there's not going to be any inmates left, but I'm joking.
You see, Mr. Mahata raised the issue of security vetting, the issue that you are raising now, Mr. Del. And we can spend millions of rand, millions. But if we don't have people, that what the commission is saying, people who we can trust, it will never help, never. Cindy Chukumba?
No, thank you, Professor. And I think when chiefs win, I mean when pirates win, then they are escaped. When chiefs win, they are no longer.
Thank you very much, Cindy. I'm a pirate. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah, Chairperson, on the issue of disciplinary steps taken against officials, it said that for managers, they are still processing that. But for other officials, they finalized. I just want to check why it's taking long for managers. Because when we visit a correctional institution, we get this idea that managers get a better treatment when it comes to disciplinary hearing. So I just want to know exactly too, why it's taking so long for the two managers.
Chairperson, mine is not a question, but a sense of appreciation. I've been to that center twice, and at the main entrance, you'll find that the officials that are supposed to man the gate, not carrying a damn. The other day, I had to step out of the car and ask, are you not going to search this car? Because they were just not, I think they were playing casino whilst the cars were coming in and out. I'm happy that the Honorable Regional Commissioner is doing the honorable thing to stop all this type of nonsense. Thank you very much.
Every time we are talking and discussing about escape,
and to him, we have never heard of one day that this people who helped this inmate to escape are in court or they are being sentenced.
En die vorige regering, die apartheid regering, as die komreed gehelp het iemand ander mense om ons in die bedekant toe gaan, as het gevang het, dan het het vir ons gekom. En ook die demo te kwaad
die 1994, with the other government, the previous government, when comrades were helping people to keep the country, when the police arrested them, they are going to the center.
Nou, die ding wat ek opvang, 10 mensen, daar is het in Kalanagos. Misschien die andere van hen, die mensen die doorgaan, die andere misschien is gereed. Maar iemand, hij helpt hen. Maar ons woord, niks van de regering. Kijk daarvoor, dat is die verkeer. Het is die schoenen van geen verkeer van 99 man. Nou heb ik die opgegaan, van een jaar. Maar nou, hoe komt die wat er? Een mens wat je helpt, die mensen wat andere mensen doorkomen. Ik denk, of ik denk zo veel, om die andere mensen weer gaan doorstaan en weten te kunnen. Op wat gaan we? Op de woord. Als het gebeurt, is dat er niet.
These people who is helping this, assisting this dangerous criminal. We never hear about this. He has made an example of where this lady was arrested for stealing shoes, baby shoes of 99, but she was found guilty and sentenced to prison. Now this one, you never hear about them being sentenced because they are the most dangerous.
Yeah, but again, on some part, I did front suspension. Suspension. As hell it is, for net suspension, it will not come. I think, as a can Ian or Phil, who shall get a credit, who shall get a credit, Ian was a method.
We are always talking about suspension on these people who have helped these people to escape. These people are not taking us serious, they will always help the inmates to escape.
Now, for the again, die record van die department, al hoe die demand het gebruikt werd, maar ik heb gewoon die antwoorden gezegd. Die leer wat noemde die department, er was niet naar gezegd. Maar die record is daar zo. Laten we voor ons zeggen, al die mensen wat er zo weg is, hebben we getrokken. Wat is er aangegaan? Wat is er aangegaan? Niet van centje, want dat gewoon al die mensen van centje. Maar ons woorden van centen van prison.
The bishop wants to hear from you, commission and the department, about this people who is helping, assisting inmates to escape. He wants to hear. He's saying that you are having a record. All these people who have assisted this inmate to escape, can you give us an account? How many of them have been sentenced? He's talking about the prison officials who have helped these people to escape, because he's saying he's very much worried about that issue.
Over to you. Oh, sorry, that's Mr. Mawate. Sorry.
Yes, thank you. The commissioner mentioned the issue of the fourth alarm that led to them collecting or not using. How long was this happening? How long did it take for them to fix it before the escape? Because I'm sure it was not long before the escape. Maybe the failure of these managers that they have done.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mawad. Over to you, Commissioner.
Honorable members, I'm sure the regional commissioner and perhaps the area commissioner will respond to some of the specifics. The question raised by Honourable Phil as to the capacity within the department to share intelligence information. As you know, that we're not an intelligence gathering organization on the one hand, but there's security information that comes to our attention, and there is a protocol that requires responsible managers to communicate this across with their colleagues in order to assess it and to respond to it. And therefore, in this instance, there was, in the first place, an obligation on the part of the relevant managers to share this with their regional colleagues, who would then have with them decided on how they should intervene. I think it's an area of weakness that we've identified. In the more recent years, we've linked up with our colleagues in the Department of Defense to expose some of our senior managers more to this type of security training, and where we can begin to become a bit more sophisticated. It's an area of weakness because of the limitation placed on us. We obviously reliant on our colleagues in crime intelligence and national intelligence to help us. And I referred in my introduction to a project that we have given to NIA with crime intelligence and ComSec to develop a response to these areas of vulnerability. So I can only confirm that it is an area where we are weak. We have said that let's look at ways to strengthen that. It's part of what we've also seen, and this perhaps it relates to the question around vetting of officials, our inability to take responsibility as VCS to do the vetting and to ensure that we do not use the excuse of the capacity or the lack of capacity of NIA to vet our members. And we have reported here previously that we've established our own vetting unit in VCS. The people employed in the vetting unit have been through training by NIA itself, and they've started, commenced the process actually of vetting. But the backlogs are so huge, it will take us a number of years to catch up. And I wish, and I'm asking this, that my colleagues can ensure that when we do have this engagement on Thursday with the intelligence agencies, to also raise the issue of how do we fast track. Quite clearly, we will not be able to do so with 40,000 members at one go, given the intensity required. But there is a way in which we have to prioritize on the basis of where we're most vulnerable, and to perhaps continue to use resources outside of DCS to try and catch up. I certainly have indicated to other partners, in fact, where the integrity of people are in question, such as the Special Investigation Unit, to do some integrity testing of a different kind. So, yes, we need to look at ways of strengthening, and I have to admit that's an area that that we are weak at. So, I hope with the two questions, while I may not be making you happy, just to acknowledge that it's something that we are prioritizing. And although it's tongue-in-cheek, 2010 is coming, and in fact, we need to make sure that this issue of our vulnerability during soccer matches are addressed, and I don't know if it means I should start taking the television out of our senses, but certainly we would have to develop a protocol around the issue of television and soccer. It's quite serious, and we're going to be vulnerable, and you may have raised it in tongue-in-cheek, but I think it must be part of our security considerations come 2010. Honourable Chikunga, the question around the managers, we're referring to different managers. Some of the investigations did point to certain managers who should have been charged and who were indeed charged for gross negligence. In this case, the initiator in the case decided to split the number of cases depending on the types of issues they were dealing with. And unfortunately, in the splitting, certain cases normally would just go faster. Others would be about more manipulative of how they prolong the process. And in this case, with the two particular managers, I know they have tried to prolong the case by calling on certain privileges that we have to accede to during the disciplinary process. But there's no other agenda. It's really just unfortunate in this case, the particular managers have used tactics that ordinary staff normally would to prolong the case. I've referred to the separate investigation that I've asked around management culpability. That was outside the investigation that the regional commissioner embarked on that I've given to DIU to look at culpability of managers not raised in the investigation locally. And that relates to people who are quite senior, senior managers who we are saying must be held to account. And that report was only completed recently and will be acted on by the regional commissioner now. So that was a separate investigation and that one took longer. I think there are other questions directed directly to the regional commissioner, and I'm sure he will respond to that. Biskop Tolov, and the problem that the offer is central for the hele gesprek waarmee ons bezig. The fact is, tot wanneer mense weet, daar gaan gevolge wees, en ernstige gevolge, sal hulle voortgaan om die verkeerde goed te doen van hy verwerkt. Ongelukkig...
The issue that Bishop Tolo is raising is a central issue. If all people are not feeling the consequence of their actions, they will not stop.
And since Bishop Tolo's English is a lot better than my Afrikaans, let me say and not unnecessarily prolong the committee's work. I think I wish I could tell you that I have better information. I was kind of sheepishly looking to my right. He's been here longer, Mr. Smallberger, hoping he could say I can volunteer the number of cases where there's been a finding and that there's been someone locked up for the number of years. I think there may be such cases, but it's going to be quite difficult to isolate it more in recent history. These matters are firstly in the hands of the South African police and then the courts in arriving at that decision. In terms of the police, I think when we do meet and engage about the challenges of organized crime confronting us, a resolve to really target members who have been compromised and to ensure their consequences, that resolve must be there. And so certainly in our discussion with crime intelligence, we need to ask them to more rigorously pursue these cases. I can only imagine in when it comes to a range of cases and how they prioritize and the problems that we have in the country with regard to detective services and the skills. I don't want to comment too much on that. But I hope the South African police can perhaps at some point explain how they prioritize and how these cases never seem to come to court or seldom come to court. I can tell you that why we seem to conclude disciplinary cases more easily is because we are approaching it from two different angles. My learned advocate colleague here will say that in a disciplinary case we only have to prove what's the word they use on the balance of probability. The test there is not that strong. In a legal case, the issues of reason, beyond reasonable doubt places further obligations on testing and reliance on other colleagues to come forward with information and other inmates who more often than not may have benefited directly or indirectly from the kind of corruption that we're talking to. But I again, this is where we have to admit that we're perhaps not doing enough to make sure that certain cases are taken up and pursued to the end in order to begin to put this message across. And I wish I can give an undertaking that would change, but I know I'm dependent on my colleagues in other agencies to do so. I think maybe my colleague, the regional commissioner, can refer to the specific questions asked by Kosit Tolo. I think there's and Mr. Mahoti. The Honourable Morty, you placed the question around the gate. RC, President.
Thanks, Commissioner. Thank you very much. Chairperson, I think just to indicate on some few things, before the two questions, before I respond to the two questions that have been raised, In the report, we referred to disciplinary action taken against the unit manager and an acting head of center on the 4th of August when the escape took place. So I think the commissioner has alluded to the fact that, you know, that had to, the disciplinary process had to run its own course at that level, and now we have to deal with the two senior managers on issues of management accountability. So in this sense, we have taken action against a manager. The only difference is that in this case, I'm referring to two senior managers who operationally should have done whatever they were required to do and so on. So that's a different process altogether. The other one, I think there was a question about inmates being left unlocked for an extended period of time. Now, these issues are issues that were observed during the investigation. In fact, some of these security breaches that were occurring in Kuala Lumpur before the escape were somewhat culturalized, if that's the correct term. In other words, this thing became a norm of sorts that during weekends, a unit would be left sort of open, you know. But I think, Chair, you were there, but we're not talking about them loitering out there in the yard. It's inside the unit. Okay. And it's to me an issue that speaks to supervisory and management control of that situation. So we said that there was this lack of supervisory and management control. And because there was that, so you had also, on the one hand, this kind of security breach that could easily occur. You know, people just left there and then be locked up at whatever lock-up time and so on. So those are the issues that we're now beginning to attend to. So how are we attending to them? We have had to shift around the unit managers, for instance, so that we try and rectify that problem by ensuring that we have the correct type and character of personnel to deal with those issues. But also we are beginning to take measures to enforce a corrective steps as well as discipline where it is necessary for us to do so. So it's a matter, it's an observation made, but we're also attending to that of particular observation to say we must follow the stipulated procedures and policy around the issue of movement control of offenders within the center. Now, the false alarm thing on the fence, it's a matter that has not been rectified precisely because it's a technological problem of sorts. We referred to the humidity, for instance, so that thing responds to humidity. So it would always buzz off this false alarm, but also the influence of the Indian Ocean there and so on, humidity plus blowing winds and so forth. So we'll also do that, continue to do that. So one of the issues that we registered with Public Works is exactly this point also, to say we must, that issue must be looked into. So when we refer to the allocations, right, that have been made by the Department of Public Works to assist us in beefing up the security situation there, we do hope and trust that this issue specifically will also be attended to. In other words, we need an electrical fence that is not going to be tampered with by these external environmental factors, natural external environmental factors. I think that will help us quite a great deal. I think those were the two questions that were outstanding, Chair, that has happened there. So thank you very much.
I'm not sure if the Chairperson's initial question efficiently dealt with. Chair, you may want to come back. You have pointed to, at the beginning, the fact that they've moved without, still without injuries. I think you've touched on the fact that they've been
around the two-way radios and what that communicates, and the nature, the way in which they've exited, obviously mocking people on the camera well, and that some of these things are common, I think it is important just to reflect on it.
Yeah.
Yes,
no,
so
I think
thanks, Chairperson, and thanks, Commissioner, for reminding me that point. You will realize that when we, in this report that we just presented, there is no case that proves collusion. What you have breach of departmental policies and procedures. And that's what we have had to act upon. Now, I'm stressing on this point deliberately because I think the issue that you're raising, for me, goes beyond the internal measures by DCN. It's also the issue of the ongoing criminal investigations by the NIA, the South African Police Service, and so on, to arrive at the point of collusion, for instance. Now, because I think the way ideally one should be able to arrive at is the whole question of, if there was negligence, why was the site negligent? Was it deliberate or was it just something else? You know, that sort of thing. I think that is what we would be in a position to firmly arrive at, particularly when criminal investigations are then concluded by the South African Police Service and the National Intelligence Agency, because then the question of deliberateness would have to come forward. Now, I'm responding to that because of what you saw in the video, whether the signals, saluting, and whatever and so forth. You need the competence of a dedicated agency to arrive at such conclusions, whether those salutes were the cause of the collusion factor and so on and so forth. So I, at this stage, I would say that we would have to stand guided by what transpires at the level of criminal investigation.
No, Commissioner, unfortunately, I won't agree with you when it comes to there is no collusion. You see, from me outside, you see, if an inmate goes out of the gate and greets the official, to me personally, it says something, to say thank you. This person is supposed to guard this person, and here is this person going out. I am saying there is to me. It looks there is collusion in this whole escape. And I'm saying that is your view, Commissioner. But my view is that you can't have a situation where this person is greedy. And yes, is an official. And not one. Many of them are standing there and saying, goodbye. We are going now. That is what we all of us saw the video, and that is what we are saying. But members, before Bishop Torres, members, that lunch is now 10 to 1. I'm not going to break because we are going to have that briefing, and then we will go because we are having a 2 o'clock sitting. If members are going to ask questions, please make it brief. Just ask the question so that we go to the other people.
No,
Commissioner,
I'm just going to raise the question. See, if a member of parliament and others make little sense to see a photo or a report in the newspaper, in the TV, and in the driving and so on. And I remember Commissioner Maynard was sitting in the chamber and he was on the street. But now, Mr. Jefferson. I say, can the department to provide us with the name of those people helping this city to escape? Because here we can see the 10 of them I can see here. But now they can help us with the name of those people helping the city to escape. As a public also, we must know. We can see that many of the papers. We don't need his name. He can also provide us in the black and white. We must know who can. Thank you. Thank you.
Honorable Mr. Solo, I want to promise you if I find those people and they've been found guilty, I would want to give more than their names to you. I wish I can deliver them personally to you. But I shouldn't say that unless people think I want you to do something illegal and you have any constitutional status to present, respect the rights of even people who have offended. But unfortunately, this is what we are saying. I think we need to respond to your question more directly and ask I'm asking the director management secretariat to ask us to ask that we do some research on the number of actual cases where we've suspected collusion and just to get a status report over a period of time. I've been talking to the Chief Deputy Commissioner of Corrections when preparing for this session, and one of the things I asked him is that we should go back to some of our reports over a longer period, analyze the trends, pick up on the lessons, see what it is that we've done on the basis of what's been recommended. And I think this is one of the issues, Chair, where there's been allegations of collusion, who are these people who have been identified and what has happened? Has there been any kind of finding once they've been apprehended by the court, and whether they are indeed serving a sentence. I think no matter how difficult it is, it's important that we begin for ourselves to do that analysis, even if it's only to use it as a basis for engaging subs and others around the issue of making sure that we more seriously pursue this, because I think you've got a very strong point. And I think, unfortunately, I can't give you names of people, simply because I'm saying it must still be done as an exercise, and I can only give you names of people who have been found guilty, not those who we even suspect of. So I can't list those people who have been alleged to have waived at the inmates. So with that undertaking, Chair, I hope you will be okay. And then perhaps for us, once we've done that specific analysis, to provide that feedback to you through the chair.
We'll get a list of the names. Members, I think there's no question to take one. Commission, members, I've said that they must bring in the food so that we can grab something, and the commissioner and the team, and because we are going to get this briefing now, and after the briefing, we have agreed that we are only going to get the briefing, and we are not going to ask questions of the people, because we will also deal with the same. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've asked the Regional Commissioner, Gauteng.
Sorry, Commissioner, let them distribute the
intimidating a presenter, I will throw you out.
No, it's the other way around.
You are.
I've been intimidating you to report responsibly on the Lacock matter. But yeah, I'm sure our media is quite responsible. Chair, I've asked the Regional Commissioner Gauteng to just again take us through this presentation, and the reason I'm doing so and not doing it myself is because I've also asked the Chulahe with the investigators to make sure that we do not highlight things unnecessarily that may make it difficult for their investigation. So it seems more, being a person with a legal mind, it's more aware of where those things may be that may be difficult for investigators. So if we do skip some of the stuff, comes from that angle that she has had that preparation. So with your permission, I'll ask the advocate in Corby to do so.
Yeah.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, members of the committee, good afternoon. In dealing with the presentation, as the commissioner has said, I'm not going to go through each point by point, Chairperson. However, the information that we felt is relevant for the committee, as you say, because the investigation, both internal investigation and investigation by the police, is still going on, is on the document. Just a brief background, Chairperson, to clarify that the offender Lakote, whom I'm going to be referring to as Lakote, as I proceed with my presentation to the committee, was actually an awaiting trial offender at Johannesburg Medium A. As we know, that awaiting trials are still presumed innocent until proven guilty, they have not been sentenced. They are entrusted in our care so that the police, as and when they need them for further investigation, they can request them to be released to their care for the duration of those further investigations. And I'm mentioning that person precisely because this is the type of situation that we're dealing here, where actually the placement of the offender is actually determined about by where exactly the cases that are pending are. For example, we don't have the liberty to move the people as much as we would have that liberty when we're being sentenced offenders, because we need to check which courts are relevant, and the proximity is quite critical in that regard. Chairperson, this offender actually came to our center, was incarcerated on the 26th of February in 2007 for multiple fraud and forgery charges. It's also important that I mention that there was a pending extradition application which was heard on the 24th of June in Victoria Court. The other charges had appeared in Johannesburg Court. What had happened then on the 28th of March, as I've mentioned in my account, that the subject, when it's necessary, come to us and present procedurally a document that requires us to release a particular offense. So they did this on the 28th of March, and they presented a document that appeared on face value to be a valid SAC-127, which is a form that they issued for the release of an offender. They presented this document in our center in Johannesburg to the relevant officials at our disposal area. Officials looked at the document, they thought this is a valid document, they did the necessary, verified everything, released the offender to the policemen who were there, having taken all the necessary questions which relate to, for example, taking the ID documents of the police who came through, making copies thereof, taking into, for example, the vehicles that they've used and all that, those identification mechanisms which are in place. Subsequent to that, I want to mention to the person that earlier in March, there had been a mass search in that center, in which subsequent to which this offender had actually complained about the assault. So that during the investigation of this assault, now in April, the director there is following up to say, what has happened to that? Has he continued to investigate, to report the matter to police? Just give me feedback. In following up that matter, then the center decided to call the offender and actually consult him on the matter. They then discovered that the offender is still booked out as he was on the 28th. And this is how then we discovered actually that this offender is not in process by SAR. A follow-up was made, an investigator was consulted, and when he was contacted, actually was not aware of the SAT-127 document that has been handed over to us. When that was discovered, it then became clear to us that this is also another matter where we thought this was a valid release, An investigation then was started internally, and then the criminal case was opened, What I want to mention as well is that as we discovered that the offender is not there, when we wanted to find out in which for example, taking, taking out and all that, the document in the file has disappeared. Which then make us believe certain that there must be an inside job around the file. Because the documents are supposed to be there. Verification was done in terms of those officials who purported or who must stand as the police officials when they came to request this offender to be released. And then subsequent to that, we then decided the police should work closely with us. I had a pretty different experience, I was saying, with the commissioner involved in investigating from that side, but we had a parallel internal investigation, though we are working very closely with the police on the matter. So this is how we discovered the matter. The investigation is still pending. We do hope, as a person, that as the investigation progresses, it's going to shed light in terms of the circumstances. We, at this stage, are not able to say whether there was negligence on the part of our officials in terms of those who were on duty at the time. Hence, we have not suspended or acted on anyone of them. We're hoping that the investigation is going to give us some light in terms of their role, whether there's something beyond negligence, whether there's something, you know, because obviously, when the victims are missing, they think people from correctional services have a role in the whole matter. So I think in terms of the remedial steps, it's quite difficult when the investigation is not completed. However, having looked at the whole matter and the sequence of events, we also already have some lessons to learn. We have tried already the person and members of the committee to tighten up controls in terms of how the documentation are secured. Documents are kept actually at the disposal area. We have also made sure that we tighten up the levels of verification and confirmation of the SAP 127. We do have procedures in place that are there, but we think they need to be much more compliant and strictness in terms of who does what and sort of double verifying and confirming, not only with the investigating officer, but also with the station directly where the offender is needed for further investigation. And I think for now, Commissioner, that is the
I'm hoping that this will be useful for the purpose. I'm sure the presentation in itself would generate a series of questions, things that is obvious and some of the things that's not so obvious. And I think both in terms of our earlier agreement but also in terms of understanding, to thank you for agreeing not to engage us on the details, because we were quite convinced that perhaps this is one of those cases where we can deliver differently, given the opportunity, and we should just allow the detective to do the work. I can see also a lot of compliance or non-compliance issues that I've also pointed out to the regional commissioner. Johannesburg, you would know that recently we've had a few other erroneous releases arising from release warrants issued by people who are legitimately court officials of the court. And so we're quite susceptible to the new kind of fraud that is showing its ugly head. And I think it requires a more appropriate and comprehensive response. But Chair, with that, I'll give back to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. There's another meeting. We have been harassed. People are standing outside here. We are supposed to come in here. Thank you very much. I must first thank you, Commissioner. I must thank the area Regional Commissioner of KwaZulu-Natal for the frankness. It's not always that we are having this type of openness from the Department of Correctional Services. But I can say it here and now that I can see that there's a change. That a change in the way in which the department, under the leadership of Mr. Peterson, is dealing with problems. And I it's a very difficult department
It's not an easy department, but you are trying your level best to be open to us and to give us. I have said that we want to assist. We are not here to fight. We want really to help the department in all these difficult issues. The regional commissioner of Gauteng, thank you very much. You were also very open and honest with us. We will come to a close meeting where we will have the details of this. But I also understand that we want to arrest this person. But if we are coming up in the open with information, we can also compromise the investigation of this thing. You have also said that there is suspect on collusion, and you can say that from us as we sit here, it's not possible that a person can go out and not been asked questions, the police and whatever. But we leave it until the time when we come back as a committee in a closed meeting, so that we must ask this type of question. The last thing that I want to say, Commissioner, and members have expressed it, I think Cindy has also raised it now. Managers must understand that the time is up where the foot soldiers are going to account. They must understand that they are having a responsibility as managers to manage that area. If something is happening there, it is not correct only to get to the foot soldiers, but they will account. They must account, because that is what a manager is. A manager must account to say, no, it's this and this and this, this has happened. If it comes, he must be fired, then it's like that. But a process will unfold. Members, I see members are sitting in there now and then. Renee, what is the story outside?
They're waiting.
They are waiting. Yeah. But with this word, I want to thank the department, really. The issue of process is, we will also deal with that issue. Thoroughly, so that the committee might be satisfied with everything. Members, thank you very much. We can have our lunch outside. We are not going to lunch. Thank you very much for your cooperation.